Last week, when we began to learn Megillas Esther, to rediscover Megillas Esther for the first time with fresh eyes, one of the structures that the Gemara offers us in the second parak, Daf Yutes, he mentioned that the Gemara is a fascinating foray machlokas hatanam, how much of Megillas Esther is meant to be read. The Chiyuv of Mikra Megillah, we take it for granted that it's all of the Megillah, but the Gemara presents four different opinions. The Mishnah presents three, the Gemara adds a fourth. And what that, as we began to consider last week, it really sort of gives us, it's a machlokas lahalacha, how much does one read? But the way the Gemara understands the machlokas is really, they all agree that it partitions the Megillah into different segments. There's Takfo, to begin from the beginning is to read Takfo Shal Achashverosh, the story that focuses on Achashverosh. To begin from Perek Beis is Takfo Shal Mordechai, Ish Yehudi. To begin from Perek Gimel is Takfo Shal Haman. And finally, to begin from the middle of the Megillah, from Balai Lahu, is Takfo Shal Hanes. It really it gives us a window into how the Tanaim partitioned the Megillah. And last week, we focused on the first parak and the story of Achashverosh. We saw that really stands as in addition to the first parak being a prelude to what's going to come, it also sort of stands as a unit unto itself. To consider Achashverosh, and as we saw last week, perhaps to consider some of the irony of Achashverosh's misplaced self-importance, and to think about the Achashverosh within. So I thought maybe tonight we could focus on the second segment, Takfo Shel Mordechai, what we refer to more or less as Perek Beis. And I think as we begin to peel away some of the layers of Perek Beis, we'll see that the Perek Beis speaks both to Anhagas Adam and to Anhagas Abori. Perek Beis has a lot to tell us about how people act and also how a little bit of what we see about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs his world. Because I think as you think about Perek Beis, you begin to look over the Psukim. The Psukim tell the story of this is the post-Vashti aftermath. Achashverosh is now in need of a new queen. And they begin to, his staff begin to think about the process through which they'll find a new queen. We're introduced to Mordechai and to Esther. Here a little bit about the history of Mordechai, that he had grown up in Yerushalayim and he had come in the first round of Galus Yechaniah, long before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Galus of the aristocracy, as the Psukim in Sefer Melachim describe it. And then we hear about the whole complicated story when Esther is taken by Achashverosh's machine, the whole bureaucracy that he's built, and she's ultimately chosen to be the queen. And then the parak ends, right before we move on to segment three, the story of Haman, parak ends with that episode of Bigson and Teresh, their failed attempt to assassinate Achashverosh. So if you think of sort of trying to pick apart, there are three major segments to this part of the Megillah, and they overlap to an extent. And I think you can identify them by three pairs of people. There's the Haggai and Shashgaz, there's the Mordechai and Esther, and there's the Big Son and Teresh. And there's overlap because we begin to be introduced to Haggai, and so that whole focus on the king's machine, as it were, the king's bureaucracy for finding a new queen. And then the Psukim go into introduce us to Mordechai and to Esther, and then we sort of go back. Those two segments overlap, and then they sort of combine, as Esther is the one who is chosen by the king's selection process. And finally, at the end, you have the Big Son and Teresh segment. So let's begin by thinking about those first two segments of Takfo Shel Mordechai, of the second parak, the Haggai and Shashgaz, and the Mordechai and Esther. And there's a lot to think about. Both segments focus on human behavior. The Big Son and Teresh is more of a focus really on Hagas Habore. But Haggai and Shashgaz versus Mordechai and Esther, those two segments are both perspectives on Hanhagas HaAdam. Perspectives on Hanhagas HaAdam, there's a lot of contrast. And just in terms of the tools that we'll use, that I look forward to sharing with you. Comments by the Malbim, comments by Vigal Ariel, maybe some other ideas as well, rooted in significant part in the Midrashim that appear in Maseches Megillah. So just a word about that before we begin. From time to time over the course of the Talmud Bavli, over the course of the Gemara, from time to time, the Gemara will sort of get into a different mode, a Medrash mode, where it's going through a segment of Tanakh and commenting line by line. It happens in a few places in Shas, but I believe the longest by far is Medrash Esther. The last 6.5 blot of the first parak of Maseches Megillah, after the Gemara is done commenting on the Mishnayos, the Gemara then just turns its attention on Yud Aleph and Beis, Ahiv Me'achashverosh, and goes straight until the end of the parak. From Yud Aleph and Beis to Yud Zayin and Aleph, 6.5 blot, almost line by line. It's, I think, the longest stretch of Medrash anywhere in the Talmud Bavli, and it's an entire, sometimes you have like a Masechah Sot, you have a segment of Medrash on the story of Shimshon, but this is Medrash on an entire Sefer of Tanakh. And there are a lot of what we may have grown up knowing is drawn about the Megillah, is drawn from these Gemaras, and it's so rich and so enriching to revisit these Gemaras with adult eyes, and to look at them afresh. Maybe we'll have a chance to see some of the lines that the Gemara has. And beginning with a comment that the Gemara makes on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and then again refers back to it in other language, but refers back to the same concept, Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and that's this question of the relationship between Mordechai and Esther. The Psukim speak of Esther as a Yesoma. She had lost her father and her mother, Chmal Tzlam. Very, very painful to think about. And Mordechai, she became a bas to Mordechai. So the Tanam Amram discuss whether that means only that Mordechai had adopted her, or it actually means that Mordechai had married her. Is bas literally? She was like a daughter to him. Or bas actually means bias. The Gemara points out there are other instances in Tanakh as well where the word bas means bias, where bas means a wife and not a daughter. So that's a question, whether in fact Mordechai and Esther were married to each other. So that does ignite intriguing halachic conversation, which is not really our focus right now. Tosfos and several Masechtos wonders if Esther was a married woman. So how you understand from a halachic perspective, in terms of Yehorg Vayavar and Kiddush Hashem, the fact that Esther is taken to Beis HaChashverosh, and Tosis has several solutions to that question, one of which has been invoked by Poskim more recently. Tosis says maybe Hatzalas Kalal Yisrael is more than a personal Yehorg Vayavar. That's something that Poskim have dealt with in recent times. Sometimes it's a difficult child to come up in Israeli intelligence, but that's not really our focus right now. It's worth, I think, thinking thematically. One of the things that gets you thinking about is a contrast between Mordechai and Esther on the one hand and Achashverosh on the other hand. And it's such a dramatic, but let's think about it a little bit. One of the things I think that strikes you is a tznius versus the utter opposite. The main topic of conversation between Mordechai and Esther in the second parak, they'll have other conversations later in the Megillah. But for now, their main focus actually is on privacy. Their main focus is on, specifically, Esther being private about her identity and Esther not sharing whom she is, which may well have been, the Gemara seems to indicate, the Malbim develops at length, that may have been one of their techniques to try to avoid Esther being taken. If she doesn't say who she is, it'll sound like she has something to hide. That'll make her less desirable queen candidate. It didn't work, but that was one of their attempts. But certainly, even the way that the Torah, the Psukim, are sensitive and delicate, and inobvious in the way they talk about Mordechai and Esther being married. And as a matter of fact, speaking of tznius, the Gemara goes on the top of Yud Gimel Beis, very fascinating chain. The Gemara links Rachel to Shaul to Esther. Because Shaul is from Shevet Binyamin, he's a descendant of Rachel. And Mordechai, and by extension Esther, appear to be descendants of Shaul HaMelech. And the Gemara says, Rachel had such sneas, and Bishar, the sneas of Rachel, the way she handled the complexities and understatement of herself and Leah vis-a-vis Yaakov, Bishar that sneas, and that delicacy and sensitivity, she was Zocha to Shaul, who in turn also, early in his career, was very tzanua and did not share the fact that he had been appointed king. It's an unbelievable degree of anava. And because that's neat, that then sort of gets paid forward and brings us to an Esther. So the Gemara is highlighting that Esther's roots are very much rooted in tznius. And Achashverosh, the whole system, the Haggai and Shashka system, is anything but. And it gets you thinking also that part of what tznius accomplishes is a real sense of respect, a real sense of dignity and mutual respect in a relationship. Because what Achashverosh demonstrates is the utter opposite. And Rav Yigal Ariel, in his Sefer Mor V'Hadas on Daniel and Esther, he speaks about the caricature that the Megillah presents us in thinking about Achashverosh. And it's such remarkable satire, because there's so much pomp. And Achashverosh, as I said before, the machine, the system, the bureaucracy. It's very formal. Haggai's in charge of this, and Shashka's in charge of that, and there are processes. And, you know, this is not just a free-for-all. This is very systematic. We have rules and regulations, loads of rules and regulations throughout the Megillah. You get a sense of the bureaucratic nature of the Persian Empire. You get that impression in other parts of the Tanakh as well. But in Perek Beis in particular, there's such formality and bureaucracy and regulations about this whole system, formalized system of choosing a queen for Achashverosh. And it's utterly rotten to its core. Rav Ariel pointed out, it's such satire that all the pomp and circumstance, but at the root of it, it's an utter objectification of women. That's what this is all about. That's just all about. It's so clear in the Psukim, the revolting way that this system is meant to enable Achashverosh to just take women and toss them. The Gemara goes on to highlight that even more. And it perhaps stands out even at the beginning, because the Malbim, there's a comment of the Malbim in the very opening of the Perek that I think further highlights this grotesque satire. Opening pasuk. Achashverosh returns to his senses. His irrational anger subsides. Zocha, now he remembers. What does he remember? Zocha is Vashti ve'esa sher asasa ve'esa sher nigza. He remembers Vashti, what she had done, and what had been decreed about her. So you imagine, okay, Achashverosh comes to his senses, he realizes, what on earth have I done? And the Malbim says, what's with the three phrases, though? Vashti. He didn't say, he remembered what he did to Vashti. Because he remembers Vashti, he remembers what she did, and he remembers what had been decreed about Vashti. And that somehow leads into the system that's to come. So the Malbim suggests that what the Megillah is capturing is Achashverosh is worried about three things. He says, I need a new queen. I need a new woman. This grotesque man says. He says, but he has three concerns. Number one, he remembers Vashti. She set a high standard. She was, Achashverosh made very clear that her looks were important to him, and he's not sure he can match that. She had a lot of yichus. She was of royal blood. Not sure if he can match that. So Zachar is Vashti, number one. Number two, he says, Shara Sasa. He remembers what she did. And he's worried that if you remember what we spoke at last week, the Malbim understood that the Perek Aleph was one big power play, and he was trying to establish himself, and she undercut him by saying, I'm not going to come to your beauty pageant. I'm the source of power. You're king because of me. So she undercut him, and he's worried, even if I find a wife that I'm happy with, maybe she'll undercut me also. And number three, Esa Shenigzola. Vashti perished at the guillotine. So even if I find someone who I think is worthy, she's not going to want me, because who's going to be, who, which woman in her right mind is going to want to marry me? I'm a danger. A wife killer. Mamash. Mamash. So, and the Malbim says, you read the next two psukim, the Nare HaMelech are responding to all three points. They said, great, no problem. We're glad that you expressed your concerns. We'll build a system to solve it. Number one, Yivakshu HaMelech Naros B'Solos Tamos Mare. You worry about who you're going to get? Leave it to us. We can find attractive women. And Yichas, yeah, who needs Yichas? You don't need Yichas. You're in charge. You don't need any royal Yichas. Number one. It's gross to even hear this conversation. You're worried about, will anyone, concern number three, Eitzah Sher Nigzar Aleha, you worried that no one will be willing to marry you, they'll all be scared, we'll just apply the power of the state. We're not just going to advertise that we're looking for candidates. We're going to have government officials, and the police state will flex its power, and we're going to force women, that way we're going to just kidnap women for you. Horrible. And the second concern, that maybe the next wife will also undercut you, we're going to break them from the outset. That's what the Malbim understands. Who needs to know, he says, the end of Pasuk Gimel, we're going to bring them to Haggai v'noson tamrukehem, and we're going to provide the cosmetics. Why is that such a significant detail that has to be part of the core plan? Yeah, okay, once we figure out all the implementation, you'll have an inventory of all the items you have to buy. Shine. So you'll see when you put together your shopping list for staples, okay, you know what you need for the office. It'll be one of the items that you need. But Nason Tamrukehen is part of the core plan. So the Malbim says yes. It's more of the same power play at Perek Aleph. This was meant to demoralize them. We're going to rob them of their identity. They're going to come to Beit HaMelech with nothing. They're not going to come with their own makeup. We're going to provide them with everything. They're going to just be kidnapped, imprisoned in the king's harem. So from the outset, Ahasuerus is totally self-centered. I want a certain type of woman, and I want to maintain my political power, and I want, and I want, and I want. And the Narei HaMelech are more than glad to build something that looks very bureaucratically impressive and is meant entirely to just further Ahasuerus's revolting, egotistical goals in the most objectifying way possible. The women are absolutely and totally, in their Persian minds, purely pawns. They are just things. They're not people. So that's really there from the outset. And
the lashon of the yik pitzulas called naros, like they're a bundle of wheat.
I hear what Michael said. Rav Yigal Ariel makes that suggestion. Actually, he says that there are two psukim. There's a pasuk here that appears almost word for word in two different places in Chumash Bereishis. That pasuk, Perek Gimel, pasuk, Perek Beis, pasuk Gimel, Yafkeid HaMelech Pikidim. He says, where have we heard that? Yosef. Right? When Yosef is laying out his plan also to a king, when Yosef is called upon to interpret the dreams, so he says, we're gonna the same language, we're going to gather v'yikpitzu all the ochel in Mitzrayim. And then Rav Ariel goes on to point that the end of this pasuk, v'noson tamrukehen, is almost strangely similar.
Isn't Esther a descendant?
Ki chen yimelu yimei merukehen. Later on, ken yimei merukehen is almost identical to ken yimelu yimei hachanutim, when they embalm Yaakov at the end. He says it's so striking. It's so striking that it in certain ways so similar and so dramatically, horribly different. Yosef is correctly treating objects as objects for the sake of people. Yosef is collecting food with a long-term perspective of helping people. Achashverosh and his people are collecting women as objects for Achashverosh's immediate self-gratification. And the Vinason Tamrukehen, the Kenyan Lulu Memrukehen, it's almost like they're being embalmed. Like these women are going to be the living, they'll be zombies, they'll be the living dead for the rest of their lives. And the Megillah is very clear. They'll just be stuck in the harem for the rest of their lives. It's one could not have thought of a sharper contrast to Mordechai and Esther, who are, number one, Kedoshim and Tahorim, and number two, are long-term, goal-oriented people. You know, a couple of Prakim later, when there are a number of Mepharshim point out, when Mordechai and Esther are having their debate about whether or not she should go to the king, and he says, maybe this is why you've been here. And you get the strong impressions, it's as though, it's like Aviv Shamaris Hadavar by Yaakov. It's like, Mordechai had been waiting, like they knew there must be some, HaKadosh Baruch must have some plan. And for years they had no idea why on earth did Esther have to go to the palace. But apparently they had been sitting on this sugya for years. And Mordechai says, now we found the answer. But they were long-term thinkers. They weren't in the here and now, and they weren't for themselves. And they were Kedoshim U'Tahorim. And in addition to the contrast with Mordechai and Esther, and the contrast with Yosef, who is in the line of Rachel, there's a contrast, he points out also, that the Gemara itself draws between this story and the opening story in Sefer Melachim. David HaMelech is aging, and his health is failing, and his advisors determined that marrying a young woman will help him medically. And there is a process there. They come to him and they say, "We'll find a young wife for you, and that will help you medically." That seems to have been the premise. And the Gemara in Maseches Megillah on Daf Yubeis Mebeis talks about the remarkable contrast. So everyone was running. Everyone was so excited. Maybe my daughter will marry David HaMelech. Achashverosh, everyone is running away, trying to hide their daughter so that they don't end up in the clutches of Achashverosh. And Yigal Ariel points out that you contrast the way the two processes are described in the Tanakh. It's astounding, and particularly, what really captures it is the Narei HaMelech of David HaMelech say, let's find the one woman who you will marry. Achas Yechida. We'll find the one woman who's the right wife for you. And that's what they do quietly and with dignity. And with Achashverosh, it's let's build a bureaucracy to process people as though they're things. There's such a powerful contrast. A Haggai Shashgaz versus Mordechai and Esther gets us thinking again. Haggai and Shashgaz and Achashverosh, as Yigal Ariel pointed out, they're caricatures. These are very, very, very extreme, very extreme expressions of Midos Ros, extreme expressions of utterly distorted ways of thinking about people. So we hope not to come across such extreme versions of such distortion, but in more mild ways, the Megillah is holding up a mirror and saying, are you a Mordechai and Esther? Are you a Haggai and Shashgaz? Are you in it for others or are you in it for yourself? Are you treating people like people or are you treating people like things? Are you about what the purpose is or are you about building a bureaucracy that looks nice and looks fancy and has a lot of externally, a lot of mishtar and a lot of rules and regulations, it's very systematic, but at its core, it's at best meaningless, at worst rotten. Yeah.
How do you know that people were trying to escape this bureaucracy?
How did the Gemara know? Let's take a look. You based on the base. I think the Gemara derives it from a pasuk in Mishlei. The Gemara derives it from and that's the comment that Malban made as well. The Pesukim Melachim say, we'll ask.
we'll see if anyone is interested in marrying you. In Esther, it's V'afked ha'melech pikidim. We're going to put at the police state, and we'll with the long arm of the law, we'll find someone. So that sounds like no one's really interested, and we're going to have to... And that was immediate. The immediate assumption is V'afked ha'melech pikidim. Now again, the Baal would point out that may have been in part, you know, Achashverosh sort of ruined his prospects with the way he handled Vashti. Wasn't exactly going to invite a lot of interest. And maybe let's spend a couple of minutes on the last of the three pairs. In addition to Haggai and Shashgaz and Mordechai and Esther, at the end of the perek, at the end of Tokfo Shel Mordechai, the last couple of psukim, perek beis, the story of Bigson and Teresh. Now they are most obviously the divine pawns. They're clearly Kadosh Baruch Hu is playing chess, and they're fulfilling particular roles. And there's a lot to be learned from here in terms of, as mentioned before, if the Haggai Shashgaz and the Mordechai and Esther elements of this segment of the Megillah are speaking to positive, incredibly positive and incredibly negative types of human behavior, Hanhagas HaAdam, there's a lot to be learned from the Big Son and Teresh in terms of Hanhagas HaBoret. The Gemara speaks in Afyugim of Beis, you know, that right after Big Son and Teresh, Paragimel, Tokfo Shal Haman, opens with Achar HaDvarim HaElo. After what happened before, then Gidal HaMelech HaShosh HaMan. You always have to wonder what, obviously it means somehow, the Gidal HaMelech HaShosh was a consequence of what? Was something that was built upon the foundation that had been laid. In what sense? The Gemara makes a suggestion that this is, the Achar HaDvar Me'ela captures this notion that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Makdim Refua Lamaka. That before, it was only after the tools had been laid out for solving the problem that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows the problem to develop. The rise of Haman and the Gezerah that would follow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets that build Achar Dvar Ma'ela. After Esther is in place and after Bigson and Teresh, which ends up, as we know later on, is going to be provide Mordechai and Esther with the ammunition that they need to solve the problem of Haman. And maybe we'll 2 weeks from now we'll have a chance to talk about that some more. The Malbim is a very fascinating understanding of the problem that of Haman and the solution of the Nes. But the big Son and Teresh were critical pieces in the solution in the Yeshua from Haman. And the Gemara highlights that the Psukim are highlighting that the Big Son and Teresh story specifically happened before the rise of Haman. It didn't have to be that way. It could have worked the other way also. Right? It could have been that Haman begins to rise to power, and then there's the Big Son and Teresh story occurs. And Mordechai and Esther intervene, and didn't have to be in the sequence. The verse says, no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically did in the sequence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be Makdim Refua Lamakam. So what's the significance of that? What's the significance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu choosing to do that, and that the Megillah goes out of its way to tell us that Achar HaDvarim Ha'ela, HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically wanted the Refua to be in place and crafted the Refua before the Makkah even begins. So at its core, it's a sharp demonstration of the fact that life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of telling us that life is not random. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is putting a pattern into place. You're going to look back and see that I was taking care of you from the outset. It captures the fact that you talk about playing the long game. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate. We spoke before about Mordechai and Esther playing the long game. Mordechai and Esther have a long-term perspective, and they've been thinking for years about it, and they're trying to understand what's the purpose. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate in the long-term perspective. It's something that we'll talk about. Yeah. And maybe one more note, which is that part of what Hikdim or Fulamaka also perhaps captures is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we think about that, what that content is. There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's going to be a rise of Haman, and we'll see how the Jews react, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is already putting the refuah in place in advance. The tools are already there to solve the problem. What that means is it captures also, not only that life is not random, but that it's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the gift of Bechira Chavshus, but it's true that we have Bechira Chavshus, but that itself is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bechira Chavshus isn't random either. Bechira Chavshus is not a diminution of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the decision to give us free will, because he wants us to have that opportunity. But that itself is a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Mekubalim refer to as tzimtzum. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, you know, squeezed himself in a little bit. Like when one more person wants to get on the elevator, it's everyone like, we think that if we inhale somehow that makes more space. But what we're trying to do is be mitzamtzim ourselves. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls the entire universe and makes a decision. He's in charge and uses his being in charge to make the decision to give us some control over our own lives. We have Bechira Chavshus, and it is itself a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And as such, it begins to make sense that even though there's, yes, we have Bechira Chavshus, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still running the show, so much so that he already put the refuah into place before the Bechira Chavshus would even begin to develop the Makkah. Bechira Chavshus is something which we will be talking about some more later on in future Shiurim. Bechira is certainly a major theme. The role of the Goral is a fascinating Mitch, and we'll pick up with more of these ideas going forward. I'm glad to stick around outside for questions. That Marv is about to start here.